following program has been brought to you by Koshan 555. On January 23rd in New York, Koshan 555 kicks off its 10-city national culinary competition promoting heritage breed pigs and breed diversity. The tasting event will challenge five chefs, including Brad Farmery, Peter Hoffman, Bill Telepan, George Mendez, and Sean Rembold, to prepare a menu created from five heritage breed pigs, nose to tail. Pig-loving epicureans will have a chance to sample these dishes along with wines from five different small wineries, as well as the opportunity to help select the king or queen of pork. In addition, guests will be treated to whole pig breakdown demonstrations, followed by a whole roasted heritage breed pig and dessert. General admission tickets start at $125 per person and are available at www.koshan555.com. That's www.koshan555.com.
Welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, your host here on Heritage Radio Network. And today, if you're listening live, I want to wish you all a Happy New Year. We are also celebrating today. Many people are celebrating the Epiphany, being the 6th of January. And in association with New Year and the Epiphany, there are so many different traditions and celebrations around the world, a lot of them, most of them, having to do with food. And in researching some of these, I was curious as to hearing from friends of a couple of their family traditions. And so I started looking into it, and the foods that go with good luck in the beginning of the new year and or celebrating the winter solstice and the Epiphany, the arrival of the King, King's Day, many of the foods relate to round foods and then the symbolism of the round foods. And round foods, of course, being eternal life and harmony and representing coins and money. I thought it would be fun to share some of these different traditions with you, and I have a special guest that will talk about some of her traditions as well, Hiroko Shimbo, and more on her in a moment. But some of the things, I don't know if many of you were aware, green also not being round, but a lot of cultures eat greens, particularly in America and Europe, European countries eating cabbage, collards, kale, because the greens resemble folded green money, and that is supposed to represent good wealth in the new year. Of course, we all know about fireworks and bonfires and clanging pots and pans to scare away or burn out the evil spirits and drive away all the bad things that happened in the previous year, and then eating foods that will bring you luck for the new year. Grapes, the grape tradition was something that I was not aware of, although many people of Spanish origin certainly are, and any of the Spanish Portuguese colonies. Supposedly, at the stroke of midnight, they would eat 12 grapes, and many people still do, one grape for each month. And if one of the grapes tastes sour, then that month is going to be maybe not such a great month. But it actually originated in Spain. Ooh, let me see. I've got some notes here. It originated in Spain around 1909, when the grape growers in the Alicante region had a bumper crop, and a way to cut down on the large production surplus that they had was to begin a tradition of giving everybody grapes to eat at New Year and making a celebration that way. I don't know how much it cut down on the grape surplus, but it certainly started a very interesting tradition. I thought a wonderful tradition, and that has spread to Portugal, Venezuela, Cuba, Mexico, Ecuador, Peru, Guatemala, Costa Rica. So many of these countries celebrate by eating 12 grapes at the stroke of midnight. Certainly, we've all heard about the beans and lentils, black-eyed peas in the south, and any kinds of beans and lentils being, number one, round. So that represents good luck and wealth in the coming year. Wealth also because the bean and rice. And the beans and the rice swell up, and the swelling up is the growth of fortune. So may your fortune grow in the coming year. And the round again for good health and long life. And in some of the northern countries, the Netherlands and Denmark, they eat dumplings or fritters, round dumplings and fritters, oil cakes. And, of course, being the 6th of January, we know about the King's Cakes, especially from France and other countries, where they bake round cakes and always bury a ring or a bean or an almond or some trinket, and whoever finds that trinket will have good luck for the rest of the year, becomes king for the day, and will have good luck for the rest of the year. And I think these were all very interesting traditions that happened to bring good fortune in the new year. And foods. Pork is always associated with the new year. Often the pork will be eaten in the form of a sausage, round again, or cotechino or zamponi in Italy, which is stuffed into a pork's hoof and then sliced, and that's round. Fish. The fish, of course, always being a popular dish for the new year. And in Germany, carp is very popular to eat for the new year celebration. And something I didn't realize, that a tradition often is to take a few scales from the fish and put them in your wallet and carry them around with you. The round scales, obviously, again, representing money and wealth and good luck. Some foods not to eat. There's a tradition that goes, do not eat lobster on the New Year. And so many of these elegant restaurants, you know, lobster and champagne will be on the menu. But lobsters walk backwards. And you don't want things from the previous year re-entering the new year. So you wouldn't want to eat a lobster. Oh, I thought that was interesting. And any fowl with wings that fly, because your good luck might fly away. In Germany, they also... very interesting, not to do with food, but they have a custom of taking molten lead and pouring it into a cup of cold water to see what forms the lead will take. And if it forms a ball, then good luck will roll into the new year. And that also goes, the round also goes with wearing clothes with polka dots or round circular designs on them. And in Japan, there is a custom of eating round rice cakes and more. So we have with us today a very talented woman. Her name is Hiroko Shimbo. She's a trained sushi chef. I'll say that three times fast. Sushi chef, a restaurant consultant, a cooking instructor, and a cookbook author. She is the author of The Japanese Kitchen, which was Food and Wine Magazine's Best of the Best winner in 2001, an IACP Julia Child Cookbook Award nominee. Welcome, Hiroko. It is very nice to have you.
Thank you very much, Linda.
Now, tell me about the Japanese New Year's culture. There is something that I heard about. A friend of mine went to see a ceremony, Anne Mendelssohn, and then recommended I talk to you. She went to see a mochi pounding ceremony on New Year's Day and was so impressed by it, she thought that it would make a wonderful topic. Tell me, what is mochi pounding?
Okay, so mochi pounding, New Year's Eve, usually we do on 28th of December.
Uh-huh.
Because there is a reason. So the mochi pounding, Japanese, the rice is a staple.
Right.
And the rice is, the reason why we do mochi pounding is each year we welcome a new god which protects throughout the new year. So in order to welcome new god, we have to make an offering of mochi, the rice cake, mm-hmm. to the new year's god. So to make this special offering mochi, which comes in two tiers. One large round is topped with a smaller round mochi.
So like two balls, one on top of another, that are flattened, right?
Yes, okay. Yeah. So the rice, we soak the rice on the 27th. Then next morning, we steam And the rice is glutinous rice, sweet rice.
Gluten-sweetened. And is it sweetened or it's just naturally sweet?
Oh, naturally sweet, mm-hmm. Glutinous. So it's very gooey rice. And then
sticky,
very, very sticky, much stickier than sushi rice. And then put this steamed rice in a huge wooden mortar. And then two guys do this pounding. And one guy is holding a very heavy mallet and then swing it up down from much higher than his head and maybe 100 or more or over 100 times. And the other guy is turning the mochi, pounded mochi,
in the
after
mortar, right?
Each pound. And they do this so...
Yeah, and he adds a little water so because he can't turn it. His handle stick,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, uh-huh. And very rhythmical, mm-hmm. And very quick. So when I was small, watching these two guys, I was always kind of shocked that the guy didn't hit
the other guy's
hand. Or just that they do so professionally.
Well, we have a link that we will get up on the program page on our website, so listeners can go there and they can click on. I think the YouTube has some videos, or
yes.
They can just go on YouTube and search mochi pounding. And you can see some incredible videos. Sometimes I've seen them with as many as three guys wielding these big, heavy mallets. You're right. It is frightening. I was certain that guy was going to get his hand crushed.
Yes.
So they pound this,
yes.
and it's very ceremonial. Sometimes they have music and drums, right?
Yes. It is just a great, great fun.
Yeah, and they chant. Sometimes there's a chant that I hear them screaming out something between every pound.
Encouragement,
mm-hmm.
So just to keep this going,
yeah.
On and
so
on.
It's until almost like an African dance. It really is this very rhythmical kind of activity that is, it's mesmerizing.
Yeah. And then after this pounded cake becomes very tender and soft, and then this is ready to eat, or the some part is eaten immediately. Just mixed with some sweetened azuki, just bean paste. And the other is just dusted with sweetened soybean flour.
Mm.
Then the guys is making this special osonai, the round ones, discs, which is used for... to make an offering to the god.
Mm-hmm.
Then the remaining mochi be flattened out, then just dried.
Like in a sheet pan.
Yeah.
And they dry out and then cut them
Cut into squares, uh-huh. For later, for New Year's consumption.
Oh. Well, now, and also on the website, I have a picture of a mochi offering. So they take these cakes, and tell me what they do with these cakes.
Okay, so...
And this is every home, most every home, right?
Yes, every home has to have this, because this is the mochi...
Round,
to which the god, the New Year's god, comes and stays there.
Okay, so it's on a like a little altar, a little offering, right?
Yeah. So if you don't have mochi... you don't get the New Year's god. no protection.
They're decorated very, very elaborately sometimes, right?
Yes. The simple one is always have dai-dai or some citrus fruits.
Dai-dai, bitter orange or a citrus?
That's the kind of family prosperity.
Ah.
Then has some paper hanging down. That shows a sign of this is a god territory.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't
enter
get
into it. Don't
that
touch it.
Territory. Yes. So, and sometimes kombu, kelp,
mm-hmm.
Which is the translation is auspicious.
Oh, auspicious. Or, represents. It represents.
Yeah, happy occasions. Uh-huh. So that's the very simple offering.
Uh-huh. And then, and they're beautiful. I mean, and so you keep them. How long do you keep this decorated mochi?
Yes, we will keep it until January 10th. Then on January 10th, we don't. It is quite hard. Mm-hmm. So with a hammer, we break it, then into pieces. Uh-huh. Then make some soup.
Oh.
Or even we deep fry to make crackers. And eating this mochi, which was offered to God, is by eating we get the wisdom, energy, everything from the God. So that ensures our happy, healthy, good year.
Interesting. And the round, of course, is
yes, round is harmony, peace, and two different sizes are kind of yin and yang. It's a balance.
Yin and yang, right. And the old year is the little one, and the new year is the big one. And
No.
Oh, I guess I read something different.
Yeah. And one is for prosperity,
uh-huh.
and the one is for family happiness. Fufu enman, or the just happy couple.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. That's
for
great.
The family.
Well, it seems that all cultures have some of these food traditions imbued in their New Year's celebrations. But the Japanese have a lot of spirituality imbued in many of their foods. And when we come back after a short break, we're going to talk about more of these with Hiroko Shimbo. We're back, and we're talking with Hiroko Shimbo about a lot of good luck foods for the new year. And I had previously said that lobster was a food, I guess this is in Western culture, that lobster was a food to avoid for New Year's because it walks backwards. But during the break, you, Hiroko, you were just telling me how lobster is a very auspicious food in Japan.
Yes. Obviously, every auspicious occasions, weddings, birthday, dinners, because lobster bend their back, which symbolizes longevity.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So each culture has different
interpretation. That's right. Well, I had mentioned that so much symbolism and spirituality is imbued in the food of Japan. And in your book, The Japanese Kitchen, this book is, all I can say, it's a must for anyone learning about Japanese food. From what I've read of it so far, it's just, you go into such wonderful detail about all the products. How long did it take you to write this book?
4 years.
4 years.
Yes, 4 years.
But now you I heard that you traveled all around Japan and visited the artisanal food makers to learn all about the products and the way the food was produced.
Yes, that's correct. And not just, I selected very special 100 years old, 200 years old business operations.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a one-time visit. I have visited them maybe 20, 30 times, just to get more and more information. And they were so generous that they just continuously fed me so many information, not just the productions, but history and family recipes.
Now, in those different producers that you visited, are there a couple that stand out? Like what product that the Japanese use in their cuisine all the time that you learned about?
The specific,
The production of soy sauce,
soy sauce, miso,
mm-hmm.
rice vinegar, and actually all of them use rice. Rice vinegar is made from rice. Miso use rice. Shoyu. Soybeans and wheat. And the other products like tofu, how to make tofu, how to make slimy fermented soybeans, natto, how to make nori,
seaweed
mm-hmm. for sushi. It is hard.
But there's so many.
Yeah.
Well, you and I were talking earlier before the show about how a lot of the American culture is just really learning more of the intricacies of Japanese cuisine. Of course, sushi craze came in and when the 80s or whatever, and that's all people think about now with Japanese food. And before that, it was shabu shabu and yakitori. But there's so much more to Japanese cuisine, and this book really highlights so many of the various dishes. And what we were talking about, how a lot of so much is different, and the textures are different. It's something that I think a lot of Westerners have to take time getting used to.
Yes, well, we enjoy different textures, slimy, slippery, what's the other, crunchy, gooey. We enjoy all of these textures. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is true to other Asian culture as well. And also, what makes Japanese cooking a kind of scary to most of the Americans so far is Japanese cooking is so different from other, even compared to other Asian cousins. I always explain Japanese cooking is based on fire and water cooking. Lots of simmering, boiling, steaming, blanching, simmering, that dominates the preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Other cuisine, even other Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, Spanish, French, based on oil and fire cooking. You have to start with oil just mm-hmm. to make a saute or to
stir fry anything.
Yeah, to
cook
the fish or meat. So it is the Japanese way brings more natural flavor of each ingredient in the prepared dishes. So some people say, when I cook chicken, even with the skin, because I love to, the skin protects the inside meat.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the skin gives a very nice, slightly sweet, oily flavor to mm-hmm. the cooked chicken. Then just a simple shoyu and mirin kind of teriyaki kind of sauce. And then they say, "Ooh, this tastes too chicken." But the point of eating chicken, this fish, that fish, for us is to enjoy the each flavor of
the natural flavor of the food come
yes.
through, right?
So,
rather than masking it with some
right.
cheese or something.
Yeah. No sauces.
Right. Right. That's interesting that it's fire and water, and as opposed to fire and oil. Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy a lot. You started out. You moved to when did you move to New York in 99?
12 years ago is 1998.
Yeah.
Yes.
But when you, one of your first career moves in teaching cooking, you were in Japan teaching Asian and Japanese cuisine to foreigners. in Japan, right? Interesting. So, how did you introduce them to Japanese cuisine? How did you begin? Let's say the first lesson. What would it be?
The first lesson, just to start, how to make dashi, the Japanese very basic stock, or to make chicken stock. You have to cook the
same
chicken,
as which we would do
chicken
in America,
bone for 1 hour. Well, to make dashi takes only there are many ways, so I cannot say. Just a very short, clean process.
Mm-hmm. A light fish broth, right? Interesting. And you've been on television. You've done a lot of cooking demonstrations on television. Now, your second book of
Sushi Experience.
The Sushi Experience in 2006. Now, you are a trained sushi chef. Is that unusual for a woman in Japan to be a trained sushi chef?
It is interesting. Now, the once the restaurant chef, what's the occupation is only left to male, because everything was done in apprenticeship, and the restaurant, they kept young boys in one room and then just used it for their restaurant business. They couldn't afford to get girls. Otherwise, they have to put them in the same room. That doesn't
Can't
work.
Live in the same room, no.
And the boys are much, physically more stronger. So that tradition kept women to get into restaurant
kept
business.
Kept them out of the business.
However,
right.
Today, even in Japan, there are many cooking schools for professional chefs. And including this kind of sushi specialty schools, so everyone can go and learn to be the next generation chefs.
Oh, that's interesting. But it wasn't always that way. Right?
No.
Yeah. Well, in the same, and actually in the home, though, the mother did most of all the cooking, right?
Yes, that's
right,
true.
So the women were kept at home cooking, right?
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. And much the way it was in France for many years. but interesting that you chose to, did you ever work in a restaurant as a sushi chef, or did you just apply it to teaching and research?
Oh, just applied to
teaching.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people to learn from somebody who has grown up in Japan and trained there to really learn to cook the food in the original way. And again, the book, you go into so many of the tradition and the history behind each of the foods. I like that. I think that's great. One thing that when we were talking about the New Year celebration, something I came across and I meant to ask you about, and that is the eating of particular foods for New Year's. Besides the mochi.
That's called the osechi ryori.
Osechi ryori.
Okay. Osechi ryori.
And what is that? That's just special foods, or?
Yes, very special food. And it takes 2 weeks, or at least 1 week.
To prepare? Oh, my goodness.
All varieties. And usually put it in a kind of a square locker boxes, which is stacked up to four. Then each lockerware container has different, say, one has simmered or braised vegetables, and the other grilled fish, grilled lobster, some grilled items, and then the another has sweet chestnut, sweetened chestnut, sweet egg cake. There are many, many varieties.
But this is all separated in these lacquered boxes and stacked upon one another.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And then we are very superstitious. And each item has a reason why they are in this box.
See, I was calling it spiritual. You call it superstition.
That's fine. Spiritual.
No, okay, I like religious. That. That's good.
And then, one of the examples is candied baby sardine, which is called tazukuri. Tiny baby sardine, which is dried.
Uh-huh.
And from American point of view, why you are eating this kind of fishy stuff. Which is toasted in the skillet, mm-hmm. without any oil.
Mm-hmm.
Then just coated with shoyu, mirin, sweet cooking wine, and sugar. And when you eat it, the fish just
crunches and
very
cracks.
Crunchy, mm. Yeah, crunchy cracks. And the reason is these baby sardines were used in the past as the fertilizer,
uh-huh.
for the rice paddies.
Ah.
And was an expensive fertilizer. Eating this at the beginning of the year means good harvest. But today, it leads to prosperous business to anyone.
Right, good fortune, good luck.
Fortune.
Right, yeah, good luck. Oh, well, a sweet and salty snack sounds good to me. And if it brings me good luck, well, then all the better. I'm going to go out and eat some sweet sardines.
Yeah, and they're rich in calcium.
That's very good for you, too. Sounds good to me. I like it. Well, Hiroko, thank you so much for joining me today. And I would love to invite you back and talk. We're going to talk more about the history of Japanese cuisine. And today we had a special topic, and I thank you for participating. And I thank you for listening. You can see some of these pictures, the pictures of the Misho cake offering and mochi. Let me get it right. The mochi cake offering, and as well as the mochi pounding video. Hopefully we'll have that up on our webpage. And Hiroko, you can see where Hiroko will be demonstrating next and learn more about her at her website, hirokoskitchen.com. And I thank you for joining me. Again, I'm Linda Palacio, and this has been A Taste of the Past. And thanks to Jack Ensley, our executive producer.